Hello, welcome again to Comic Connoisseurs. Tonight we'll be talking about comic miniseries as animated movies. Your host or my co-host, Shady from Saskatoon.
Good evening.
Also with us is Red Ink.
Yeah.
Alright, so we're going to talk about not only existing minis that have been adapted as movies, but we'll also talk about ones we think should be adapted. What's one you can think of immediately that was adapted? You know, the first one that pops in your head. I think I know of Greg's answer, but let's just hear it.
The first one that popped my head when you said that would be an animated movie based on Ghostbusters meeting Transformers. That's honestly the first one that popped in my head. It came out, I want to say, 2019. It's done by the same art
IDW?
And... Sorry?
Was it IDW?
It's an IDW mini. It's done by the same writing and artist team as the formerly ongoing Ghostbusters comics. They put that on hold right now. And it's this... They twist the story somewhat where Gozer has come to and destroyed Cybertron, and that's why the Transformers have gone out into the universe, primarily the Autobots. Starscream and Megatron and a whole slew of Decepticons that are now ghosts. There's this Autobot scientist called Ectotron, who is, he's the only one. He's very much like Rey was in the first movie. Like, he believes wholeheartedly that ghost spirits exist, but all the other Autobots are like, that's nice, Ecto, that's nice. Really, we got to lock this guy up. And he goes to Earth, and it almost kind of fits in with the Ghostbusters continuity. If they were to put it into the reading continuity of the comics, it would be somewhere after the mass hysteria storyline that closed out the first ongoing series of Ghostbusters. But Ectotron, he crashes in Central Park. He scans the Ectomobile. Shenanigans happen where Starscream's ghost tries to attack, and they trap Starscream's ghost in a ghost trap, and they hop into the new Ectomobile. It's like, this thing seemed new to you, and they end up having to team up with the Ghost of the Decepticons to deal with this new robotic Gozer, the Gozerian. So now you get this G1 Transformers-esque looking like Gozer, like the whatever the name was, that European supermodel covered in the slime in the first movie, and you get robotic terror dogs, Optimus Prime.
I think we're going too much into minutia with this one here.
I was just about done there, actually. I just say, at one point, Optimus Prime gets Ghostbuster, like, Ectomobile colors, and they actually released that as a, I think it was like a Target exclusive toy. I just think something like that, if they did in the art style of the IDW Ghostbusters comics, would be a lot of fun. I don't know if you'd get any of the OG Ghostbusters that are still with us to do voices and be all new voice actors, but I don't know, that'd just be a nice, fun comic. How about you, Ben?
JT, you're fired.
Yeah, I'm fired. Moving along.
Well, I want to mention one that's already been adapted. Trying to think of one that pops in my head, first one I could pop in my head. I have to disappoint you and say that I'm kind of surprised this is the first one that popped in my head. Has to be like the adaptation of The Ultimates Volume 1 as the really badly done Ultimate Avengers direct-to-video that was done in the early aughts.
The Ultimates Volume 1 was fucking bad. Anyways, nothing of value was lost in that fucking garbage.
They found a way to make it worse. What I'm saying is that's the first thing that popped in my head when I tried to think of an animated adaptation of a trader or a mini. I guess that was the first thing. Trying to think of another one that sort of fits that bill of using a trade or a mini as the adaptation source. Like, most of the ones I can think of are bad. Like,
Well, nobody said you had to have a good idea. Look at JT's.
yeah.
I got another one, unless Red's got something.
I mean, if I have to pick one that actually like does a good job of adapting and streamlining for the material, I'd have to say Red Sun's a pretty good one in that regard.
Red Sun, of all the storylines you would pick for Superman, you pick Red Sun. You really did have a brain fart, didn't you?
I did, because I just remembered All-Star, and All-Star is infinitely better.
Not just All-Star. There's a Superman story you love, you talk about, you always say you love it. And I know for a fact that you would like to see it adapted as an animated series or a movie.
Secret Identity?
Yes.
That would make a fucking fantastic... I'm talking about ones that already were adapted, but if I were to pick one that should be adapted, absolutely, Secret Identity should be adapted. I think that you'd have to get the right team to do it. Honestly, if you could get, like, the guy that... what's his name, Red? The guy that did a couple of the Marvel animations in the late 90s, early aughts? The guy that they don't use anymore for some reason?
Stephen E. Gordon?
Yeah, if they get him to like do like some of the animation directing and character design work, that'd be interesting. I just really think that, you know, I'm a big fan of Bruce Timm. I'm a big fan of the Bruce Timm style, but I think we want to see something different than that, or something that's not derived from that, so closely derived from that. I want to see something new and different and exciting. It's really hard to pick, but yeah, Superman: Secret Identity is a great story that should be adapted into an animation. I think it could be easily done, as you know, you'd have to cut some of the more interesting stuff out of it, but it could be done as a 1-hour movie or a 4-part mini animated. It really gets down to the nitty-gritty of what makes Superman such a great character, in my opinion, one that's so beloved to people like myself and Red and etc.
It's not a bad idea. I mean, I don't know if you have one, Ritter, if I can go again.
Well, it depends. Do you want something that's been adapted or
both?
Something to be adapted?
Both.
I think to be adapted is the general idea here, Vince. Why do you want to beat a dead horse so bad?
Well, for me, it would probably be... there's a Spider-Man series. I can't remember the name of it. That I would like to see animated.
Clone Saga?
Fuck that.
Do you remember the events in the story, Red? I might...
It's a retelling of all of Spider-Man's history, except he ages throughout the history. In other words, he gets his powers in the 1960s, and by the time it's modern age, he's in his late 60s.
Is that the one where he's wearing, like, a motorcycle jacket instead of just...
Last Days?
I think it's Last Days. Was it
Romita Jr. drawing it?
No, it was Mark Bagley.
Oh, okay. The Last Days was Romita Jr. drawing it.
I'm trying to remember. It's very familiar, but I can't place it. I thought you were going to...
It's Life Story.
Oh, yeah, that one. Yeah, that one's fantastic.
It goes through like the first graphic novel is 1960s, the second one's 1970s, third one's 80s, 90s, so on and so forth. And it deals with all the stories, well, not all the stories, like the key stories.
The good stories.
But at the same time, Peter Parker is aging with time as it passes. So he's no longer like a 30-something like he is in modern era. He's in his late 60s by the time, almost 70 years old by the time it's in the modern era.
Okay. Looking that up here, he's like, yeah, I think I read that once, like, ages ago. That'd be an interesting song. I know one that I would, it's two miniseries, but I would like to see it done in two separate animated films, kind of how they took The Dark Knight Returns and did it as two separate animated films, is Justice League The Nail Fall and Justice League Another Nail. And it's the story goes is the DC universe largely happens as we know it from like the Silver Age, say the Silver Age Origins and onward, except for the fact that Martha and Jonathan Kent never found baby Kal-El because his truck caught a nail on the road and caught it flat and they didn't find him in time. And you know, we still get Hal Jordan Green Lantern and like kind of the classic satellite era Justice League, except there's this huge kind of like how they have like anti-mutant bigotry in Marvel Comics, there's this huge anti-metahuman bigotry, and there's a conspiracy going on behind it. And by the end of the first miniseries, you know, the villain has been revealed. It's Jimmy Olsen, who's been driven insane by an experiment of Lex Luthor trying to. He found scraps of DNA in Superman's rocket, and by the end of the story, they find Kal-El, but he's been raised in an Amish. I don't know what.
Paradise.
No, Ben. Put it back in the box. I'm just trying to remember what the proper word for like a new Amish colony or community is called.
Mennonites?
No, they're specifically said to be Amish.
Okay.
And he's sent up in the second miniseries. Another Nail deals with another bad guy, like big bad plan to take over the world, and also deals with Superman going out into the world and you using these abilities that he's been told for his whole life by his adoptive parents never to use. You know, it's, you know, the world would never understand. And I would put dollars to donuts that Zack Snyder has read this miniseries, because this, it's almost the, what they tell Kal-El about not using his powers is almost verbatim what Kevin Costner says in Man of Steel.
You're giving Snyder way too much credit.
I don't think I've given him enough credit. But the miniseries was, I forget who wrote it, but I remember the miniseries art is done by the great Alan Davis, who's always had this very, I don't know if fluid's the right word, but there isn't a lot of hard, like straight lines in a lot of his work. Like there's motion when you look at his art. And if
Alan
they can
Davis
find
wrote
some,
it as well, by the way.
oh, he did. Okay. It's been a minute since I've read those. But if they could find some way to kind of replicate his art style, kind of like how they did an homage to Darwyn Cooks in the DC The New Frontier mini. So.
Well, one thing I have to say about the nail is it is fantastic. Alan Davis's style is actually very interesting to me in that book because it's very reminiscent of the DC House style guidelines that were published in the 80s. Like it's obviously his own style, but he's also obviously heavily influenced by that House style book.
Well, there was that Jose Garcia Lopez, right?
Yes. Which, by the way, is beautiful artwork. Beautiful artwork.
Yeah.
It's just getting that style onto animation is going to be hard. It's because that style is all about detail and fluidity in the in still images, and it's not going to translate one to one. It's the one thing I do have to say is what I really liked about the nail is. You know, I liked all the character development Selina Kyle got in there. I think that's one of my favorite parts of that book. I also really liked some of the stuff with Green Arrow in the second book, Another Nail. I just also think The Nail would be a really hard sell to do as an animated mini of any sort, or directed to a video movie. Because what Alan Davis did is a lot of attention to detail of how the universe changes by just one nail. Like, he really thought this shit through with the minutiae of detail. To get a universe that's familiar enough to what we recognize, but also different enough that we know something's off on it. A lot of that good shit's not going to be in there if it's adapted.
I mean, yeah, they definitely have to, for lack of a better term, dumb it down a lot, but simplify it a lot. But I think it'd be interesting. That's why I thought you'd do it, even if they just did the nail as a two-part and leave the another nail alone.
I think Another Nail, while there are parts of it that I absolutely love, I think Another Nail is an exercise in excess. It's like, okay, this is pretty good, not as good as The Nail, but was it needed?
So, how about you, Ben? What's another one you think would make for an interesting animated feature?
That's a really hard one because, looking back at the older books and the older miniseries and the older stories, like some of the most celebrated stories we can think of in the older days of comic books are a couple issues long. A great example of this is one that I actually think could be adapted animation-wise is I love the anime Days of Future Past. I'm not, not the anime. I love the comic book Days of Future Past, and I think that as an anime mini would be fantastic. Find something like get the old animation people that did like the prior to the X-Men animated pilot, get them to do Days of Future Past. I pay money to see that, but at the
Oh
same
my God.
time, go ahead, Red.
No, I'll wait till you're done.
Okay. At the same time, I just have to point out yet again that if you ever looked at the comic books for Days of Future Past, the Days of Future Past storyline in X-Men was only two issues long.
So what you're saying, they'd have to stretch a lot.
Yeah. Because it's actually very impressive how much Claremont jammed into two books of became underlying and pervasive X-Men lore that stuck around to this day in just two issues. Impressive, very impressive by any storyteller.
I think the best thing about the comic, besides how dense it was with Claremont's writing, was he had the right partner in John Byrne, because I believe that was that John Byrne or was that Dave Cockrum? I might be getting my artists mixed up.
I think it might have been Byrne.
Fairly certain it was Byrne. I'm just gonna look that up here, but yeah, it's just because if there's one thing John Byrne did well, was absolutely pack every panel he drew with like the most intricate details, but even the most mundane things. Like you just look at the way he drew, like say walking down the street, like it's Ben Grimm, and he walks past like a brick wall with a bunch of tattered posters on, like waving in the breeze. Like I kind of want to stop and like read what's on those posters. Like that's how detailed his work was, and for a story like that, it's absolutely the perfect partnership.
All right, go ahead, Red.
Well, I had a couple ideas actually. First one I'll bring up is I can't believe it hasn't been done yet. They've never made a fucking movie or a TV series or an animated series. I heard they pitched an animated or a TV movie for this, and it was stolen and became a much stupider fucking series, which is Fables.
Fables.
Fables is a story about like all the children's tales and stuff like that. Living in New York, they're refugees. It's not all of them, it's a lot of them though. And their town sheriff is actually the big bad wolf. And the first story deals with a murder. And that's what I think the animated series would be about. It's a murder mystery. Who killed Rose Red, the sister of Snow White?
Oh, I know what you're talking. I know what it was adapted. Oh God, Jesus. Oh God.
Yeah, Once Upon a Time by ABC.
Is this the basis of A Wolf Among Us?
Yes.
Yeah.
Okay.
Big B Wolf. And I remember reading that series back. That is a great pick, right? Because I remember I read that series when it first came out, and like one of the conceits of, like, they've cast a spell on the big bad wolf to make him look like this slightly more good-looking, but very much in the mold of Columbo kind of detective. And the whole reason he chain smokes is because it dulls his senses, because he can smell absolutely everything.
Well, it's revealed that he can smell Snow White, and like he wants to eat her. He can't stand. He can't. He's trying to avoid his instincts to eat her, so he's always fucking smoking, so he can't smell her.
And yeah, no, that actually would be really cool. They had like, it was like a bunch of the fables lived in like this almost like a gated community or apartment complex or something in New York, and there are others around the city. But yeah, no, that's actually that'd be a hell of a thing. I can't believe that hasn't been.
It's actually like several city blocks that they've magically sectored off. Like normal people will walk through it and they won't notice a goddamn thing. Stop by a store, buy a fucking pop, and leave. Like, okay, no trouble. So... But the fables all see each other as what they are. Some of them have more bestial-like natures, like the big bad wolf, so they're given human forms and stuff like that.
Okay. Didn't they have a thing where they're all at a party... And Pinocchio is there, and he's still a boy, and the only reason he comes to the party is because he wants to kick the blue fairy's ass.
Yeah. Because Pinocchio was made a real boy, but he's a boy for eternity. He can't grow up. Yeah, he's pissed about that.
Yeah, adapted the fairy granted the wish to later. No, that would be cool. Now... I mean, there's so many different characters there. Do you have anybody in mind to voice Big B Wolf?
Nolan North?
People... Nah.
Troy Baker?
Like, the people I'd want to voice Big Bad Wolf would be too expensive to buy. Like, there'd be major celebrities.
Land of the hypothetical, right? Let's have some fun.
Well, one would be what you call it, Christian Bale, I think, would be a great voice for Big Bad Wolf.
Tell me where the rabbits are.
Not doing the goddamn stupid Batman voice.
Swear to me.
Okay. Anybody else for the wolf?
That's about it. Like, I know you want to say Wolverine, but fuck that.
I was going to say Wolverine.
Which Wolverine?
I can't remember the actor's name, you guys remember that show Viper that they had in the 90s? You know, it was like an hour-long commercial for the Viper car.
You mean Knight Rider, but with a Dodge vehicle?
Well, yeah, except the car didn't talk. Just looking it up here. Well, McCaffrey, the guy, he was the lead on that show. He's the voice of Max Payne in the original Max Payne games. He has a great voice too. I think he definitely has that seen way too much shit quality that I would imagine Big B would have in his voice. And yeah, Hugh Jackman, because why the hell not?
Hugh Jackman has a high voice. He doesn't have a deep voice. I don't think he would fit for Wolverine.
Well, it's either that or Steve Bloom, and
Steve Bloom. Fuck that. I'd hire the Canadian Wolverine over fucking Steve Bloom. The original fucking Wolverine from the animated series.
That actually would be awesome.
This one's for you, Morph.
I actually seen an interview with that guy on YouTube. He does not sound like Wolverine at all when he's talking normally.
Well, I imagine most voice actors don't sound like that normally. Another one I would like to see, and they would have to streamline the story a little bit, is the Immortal Iron Fist series, when they had that a few years ago. I think it was like 10 years ago. And the initial arc of the Immortal Iron Fist series was Danny discovers that the Kunlun is one of seven celestial cities that, you know, at different times and different lengths of time, you know, interact with Earth. So, like, Kunlun comes every 10 years for, like, a day, and then it is locked away in whatever dimension it lives in. And he finds out the whole... What's that?
Outworld?
No, there's no Outworld, Ben. And the whole reason that Kunlun comes every 10 years like that is for the last however many centuries, they have this tournament every 10 years, and whoever wins the tournament, you know, gets like that 10-year marker, and the other cities come and go, but in like much longer or shorter lengths of time, and you meet these other...
Do they have to fight in Mortal Kombat?
Ben?
You're giving the problem with Mortal Kombat, man.
This isn't the... The plot of Mortal Kombat is the plot of Enter the Dragon. We all know this, so you don't need to bring it up. But yes, he has to fight in a tournament. And he meets these other martial artists. There's Dog Brother Number One, who's like this Japanese hobo samurai warrior. There's Fat Cobra, this guy who's this tattooed sumo war fighter or wrestler, but he moves almost faster than Danny can strike. And the Bride of Nine Spiders, who's like basically like this demon that can turn into like a slithering horde of spiders. And they have to stop, fight each other, and they find out there's one of the leaders of one of the celestial cities is trying to game the tournament so he can take ultimate power for himself. And I think that'd be something, if you could get some of the animation studios that have done some of like the Netflix animated series, or somebody from like a really solid animation house from Japan who's worked, you know, forget what studio worked on Bebop, Ben?
Cowboy Bebop?
Yeah.
There's a couple different studios.
Yeah. Sunrise, I think, was involved.
Yeah. But you get somebody can get like a real fluid fight scenes. Like I'm at a loss to suggest which one, but it's just, yeah, it's Marvel's Mortal Kombat. I think that would make for an interesting, definitely a visually striking sort of miniseries. And I mean, if you can put a little bit of an anime spin on it, that seems to be the hot new thing. You get even Studio Madhouse, like the ones that worked on the Marvel anime from about 10 years back. I think this would have a lot of fun, and because I think Iron Fist as a character deserves a lot more love in live action or in animation, and Marvel definitely owes us a decent Iron Fist series after the Netflix debacle. So, but you know, back to you, Ben. What's another one you might like?
Well, I'm not sure you can make a whole mini of it, but. One scene that I think definitely deserves animation, I'm just going to throw out there, is there was an issue of Fantastic Four. It was like the Tournament of Champions, and it's like you have this guy come in from the space and says he wants to fight Earth's strongest champion, and Ben Grimm the Thing pops in, and he gets absolutely wrecked, but he does not give up. And that would make a great animated scene. I think Red knows the scene I'm talking about.
And the one where Ben keeps getting up is that you're going to have to kill me to stop me.
Yeah.
And the champion, who's one of the elders of the universe, like the Grandmaster and the Stranger and all those guys, is, you know, the things Warrior Valor touches his heart, and he's like, you know what, I tap. And they had a follow-up, I think the issue following, because I think that was a Marvel 2-in-1 issue, where the things in the hospital healing up, and like the X-Men and the Fantastic Four and the Avengers, everyone just takes turns like patrolling the hospital, because all these villains come out of the woodwork to like, we're going to take out the thing, and they end up getting whomped by all the superheroes that happen to be in that 4-block radius.
Wasn't the ending Sandman's the last one? And him and Ben Grimm share a drink?
Yeah, he sneaks in with a 6-pack and a stogie for Ben. And there's, I forget if it's that issue or a different Fantastic Four comic, but there's something like Dr. Doom's checking in. He's like, it would be so easy for Doom to snuff out his life, but Doom is an honorable man, and he will not lower himself to like that. I'm pretty sure it's in that issue too. But yeah, no, that would be a pretty powerful... Even if Marvel did like some animated shorts the way DC used to do the DC Showcase with their animated films, you know, something like that, that'd be cool. I don't know if you got another one, Red.
I do have another one. It's, I don't think it'd ever be made, but it contains one of my favorite moments in Superman's history. It'd be a Superman, I think it's Superman Unbound. No.
Well, that is a Superman comic. I don't know if that's...
That was actually a movie they did, and it was the last one they did before they started doing a continuity.
Okay. It's Superman Grounded.
Ah.
Is that the GMS.
It's where Clark Kent Superman kind of loses touch with humanity for a second. Kind of loses his hope. And he grounds himself, and he decides to just walk across America. And it's Superman doing simple things, like helping a person fix his car, or just talking to people, like just being human. And one of the best moments is where he's talking to a jumper.
Oh, and God, yes.
She makes a promise not to save him, and he keeps his word. And he explains to her that he's not a god. Like, somebody he loved died of cancer, and he couldn't do shit about it. Stuff like that. And in the end, all she needed was just a hug. And he's there for her.
That would be a great one to be done as vignettes, I think.
Another one I had on my list,
just got an idea from saying that. Going back to Red's earlier idea of the Spider-Man story through the decades, you know, I just thought of a way to try to do like that as vignettes with a framing story that would instantly make it like almost like a tearjerker. Same time. Make the framing story the boy who collected Spider-Man.
Oh, like that one, the Spider-Man's biggest fan?
Yeah. Where Spider-Man goes to visit his biggest fan, and they're showing all these old newspaper clippings, and each clipping segues to a story of each decade.
That would be cooler. Done in an animation style that's reminiscent of each decade, if not necessarily set there. But...
Doesn't need to be, but like I said, it's because how else can you really stretch out the boy who collects Spider-Man into a whole animated movie?
Yeah. Another one that I had on my list here, and again, this is just some that I strictly for fun, land of the hypothetical, it's two different Thundercats miniseries that are both crossovers. Now, the first one is Battle of the Planets Thundercats, where, you know, Gatchaman, the science was it Science Ninja Gatchaman team is they go on this mission to they get this distress signal from another dimension. It's coming through this like crack in the space-time continuum. They end up on Third Earth, and there was it Spectra was the name of the evil organization they fought on Earth, has come over there, and they've teamed up with like the evil mutants and Mum-Ra, the ever living, to, you know, mine Thundrillium. The bird themed ninjas team up with the Thundercats to kick evil ass. I was like, yeah, that'd be fun. And if you could do it in the style, the art studio that did it was, I can't remember the artist's name. It's one of the artists that work in under Udon Comics, a very famous for the Street Fighter series.
Was it, was it
Alvin Lee?
Okay. It was Omar Dugan?
No. Okay. He didn't do any art in that miniseries. And the second one, and this is one that, this is straight up for us children of the 80s. It's a crossover I wanted when I was a kid and finally got in comic book form, is He-Man Thundercats, where after failing for the umpteenth time, Mum-Ra is given the boot by the spirits of evil, and they cut a deal with Skeletor, and he forces Eternia into the, almost the same space as Thundera, or not as Thundera, as, yeah, as Third Earth, and, you know, the Skeletor's evil warriors and the mutants team up. They try to take over. He-Man and Thundercats team up. At one point, He-Man's laid low in the series, and Lion-O figures, well, it works for Mum-Ra, so he throws Prince Adam into sarcophagus and then throws it into the cauldron to, as means by way of trying to heal Adam's wounds. And they even have this thing in the miniseries where Mum-Ra and Skeletor turn in through a, forget what the exact mechanism is, but they basically get turned into like one being called Mumator or something dumb like that. And it's just, that would be fun. I mean, naming two 80s properties that are better suited for a team up than He-Man and Thundercats.
Knight Rider mask.
You're not supposed to do that. When I was a kid, you were either He-Man fan or a Thundercats fan. And if you mix the two, you were a shithead.
Well, that's only because I have this thing called imagination.
I have imagination as well.
And I thought it would be cool if He-Man and Thundercats teamed up.
No.
And there's nothing wrong with that.
No.
Okay there, Marky Mark, what do you have?
I got nothing, but still, like, no.
Do you have another one, Ben? I do have one last one, but I want to see if you have anything left.
I kind of still want to see someone who actually does a good adaptation of The Death in Return of Superman. I know we had one recently. I just felt like it was so burdened by the continuity of the other DC direct-to-video anime movies that it put in extra stuff that didn't need to be there, and it took out some of the best scenes in that story.
Like fucking Doomsday going to a pro wrestling match?
No, I wasn't even going to mention that shit. You don't want to see Doomsday fight with the Hulk Hogan? Anyways.
Because Doomsday would go down, because Hulk Hogan doesn't lose.
Yeah, you just have to drop that leg drop and it's over.
All right. Well, what I want to say is, one of the stories that I think hit me the hardest with The Death and Return of Superman is The Boy Who Ate Superman, is the name of the story. And I feel like completely removing it entirely, I understand why people remove it, but I feel like to a lot of people who, quote, don't get Superman, it's a very strong and powerful story. And I feel like removing it, even though, like, at a first glance it makes total sense to remove it, I want to see someone who does that story but keeps in the story of The Boy Who Ate Superman.
That's the one where the kid cries out for help and Superman pauses his pursuit of Doomsday to rescue the kid's family.
Yeah. Yeah, because the whole point of the story is Superman is going to his high school to talk, you know, basically the equivalent of a dare, you know, don't do drugs, kids kind of thing. And this kid is, like, heckling Superman the whole way through. He's not saying anything out loud. He's just saying it under his breath to his friends, and his friends are giggling with him about how Superman's a goody two-shoes, Superman's lame, et cetera, et cetera. And, but when everyone else is down, who does he cry out for? He cries out for Superman, and who comes and saves him? Superman.
Yeah, no, that's... I mean, and this is just stretching it a bit for me, but if you could do three, say you do Death of Superman, Funeral for a Friend, and then, you know, Reign of the Superman. I mean, granted, Funeral for a Friend's not a huge thing. You can have that in the first one, but yeah, I think I agree with you. It's those movies, I don't think they would have been a lot better if they hadn't been burned with the new 52 continuity that DC was framing all their animated films with the last few years.
And the worst part of it is, once I'm thinking about it, is the Death Superman anime movie spat in the eye of the boy who hates Superman, in a way. Because you have this scene with Henshaw and his family, the not-so-fantastic quartet in their space shuttle. And throughout the whole time, like, you know, the ship's under trouble, and Henshaw keeps saying, don't worry, Superman will save us, don't worry, Superman will save us. And then Superman doesn't save him, and it's like, that gets him so enraged and bitter that he becomes Cyborg Superman. And in a way, doesn't that sort of spit in the eye of the boy who hates Superman?
If you're going with the New 52, then he does get saved by Superman. Because in the New 52 continuity... the original Superman saves Henshaw.
In the comics, we're talking about the animated movie.
Yeah.
Because in the animated movie, there's this scene where Henshaw and the not-so-fantastic quartet is in the space shuttle, and the space shuttle's getting rocked. And Henshaw does this dumbass thing where he doesn't even try to, like, figure out a way to get out of this. Not even try to pilot the shuttle better or any of this shit. It's just, he's actually, like, almost hands-off, almost like a leap of faith. Don't worry, Superman will save us.
Yeah.
Which is dumbass. That's, you know, I really, really hate a lot of the New 52 anime movies.
It doesn't really spit in the face of Henshaw, because that's what actually happened. Well, that's not what happened. It got retconned into that actually happening. Because Superman was busy fighting Doomsday. And he couldn't save Henshaw. Even though the Henshaw story took place probably 10 years before that happened. But it got retconned.
Which I think is kind of stupid, because the whole point of the Henshaw story, you know, that was when Byrne was on Man of Steel. It was basically, it was a Fantastic Four joke, or not joke, a homage, where Superman's trying to save these four astronauts that got bombarded by space radiation and became, got fantastical powers, the four of them, and two of them died immediately. The wife started going nuts, and the husband is, like, becoming a mechanical genius and becoming one with technology. Superman, with Henshaw, was able to save the wife, but Henshaw realized that he has become so far from human that he removes himself from humanity, and then later on in his mind twisted to where Superman exiles him. I'm going by the original post-crisis story, by the way, and... can't help feel like Henshaw was this idea that was thrown away really quickly, and the main Superman writer at the time was like, hey, what's this thing left flying? Like, oh, I can use this.
Yeah, because I mean, if I remember correctly, they save his wife. I remember reading a story where he revealed himself to her in this, like,
Dan Jurgens.
Was it Jurgens? Okay. So I remember reading a story where Henshaw revealed himself to his wife, and he's in this, like, weird cobbled together Johnny Five body, and she kills herself.
Yeah.
I thought she faded from existence.
No, she was fading, but Henshaw with Superman were able to figure out a way to sort of heal her.
Yeah. And then Super, like, because this is, again, post-crisis, John Byrne's Superman, and Henshaw downloads his mind into, like, the birthing matrix from his spaceship and space pod, and he flies off into space, and when he comes back as Cyborg Superman, that's how he had his DNA, because Superman's DNA was still inside that craft.
Well, if you're going by Mark Waid's fucking retcon of Superman's origin, he was literally conceived in the craft. The craft was a womb.
Yeah.
But, like I said, I really think that doing a version of it that isn't burdened by the animated New 52 continuity and trying to keep some of those points like the boy hates Superman would make a story that impacts differently.
I just about forgot my idea. It just came back to me.
Okay.
If we're talking about Reign of the Superman and Return of Superman and Death of Superman and all that shit, there's a story I would like to actually see animated. It's a newer story. It's called From the Dark Universe, Death of Superman.
Is that the one where Lois goes crazy?
Yes. It isn't just Lois going fucking crazy. Yes, she does go crazy during it, but it's a recap. Like, it just show, like, to her, she sees how shallow fucking superheroes are. Like, oh, they weren't here to help him when he was fighting Doomsday? Oh, awesome. Where the fuck were they? They happen to show up at the end. They're showing up for all the pictures. They're carrying his fucking corpse while I have to sit in the fucking back, and I can't, I'm his fucking wife, and I can't even go beside his coffin. His mother has to watch it on TV and shit like that, and she just, stuff like that just keeps building up. Then there's the Return of Superman, the Super Reign of the Superman, and the Eradicator gets damaged and merges with Lois, giving her superpowers. And she just goes on a fucking, not a rampage at first, but her idea is, I'm not going to stop the problem, I'm going to stop the root of the problem. I'm not going to stop the drug dealers, I'm going to stop the people who make the fucking drugs. I'm not going to stop terrorism, I'm going to stop the people behind the terrorism, kind of shit. Like, she just, like, in her own mind, she is going crazy. She's like, Superman's just a band-aid. He never actually got anything done, but he kept on fighting the problem. He never got to the source. And she just gets darker and darker and starts killing more people and stuff like that. Batman stops, tries to stop her, and she kills Batman. And then it's, like, goes word, almost word for word at the end of the fucking story, where Superman actually returns. And he sees she's become a fucking monster. And he's shocked by it. And because he sees it, she fucking sees it through his eyes. And it's kind of, what have I become fucking story. And I think it's an underrated story. I like it.
Now, a lot of those tales from the Dark Multiverse, I think, is the banner on a few of those specials, is they've had some interesting ones. Like, they had, they did Tales from the Dark Multiverse Batman Hush, where Tommy Elliott, basically, Gotham's become like an actual police state and succeeded from the U.S., but there's this guy in this Batman Hush combo costume going around, like, abducting villains, and turns out it's Bruce Wayne, who's been trapped inside Arkham Asylum for years, and he's instead of doing the whole around the world tour to become Batman, he's just learned from all the criminals inside the Nut House. But yeah, no, that'd be fun. My last one that I have here, it's actually two, and I don't know which one I would like to see more. It's two different miniseries that was created by J. Scott Campbell. There's Wild Side. Well, one's Danger Girl and the other is Wildsiders. So Wildsiders,
Wildsiders didn't even come out. It was advertised but never released.
Actually, they got a zero issue, and a issue one and two was supposed to be like a 3-issue miniseries. The third one sadly never came out and is never going to come out. But the idea is it's these group of kids who get these like Power Ranger like suits that generate these programmable holograms based around the attributes of animals, and a lot of the characters are drawn to look like actors from like the 80s and 90s. So like the tech nerd kid who created this stuff looks like Cameron from Ferris Bueller's Day Off, and the two football jocks, like the QB and the running back, look like Jason or James Marsden, like Cyclops and Jack Black. The main villain is, and he said this in interviews when it came out, the main villain is designed to look like and patterned after the business-minded parts of Gene Simmons. And the art was really cool, and they used like some real cool digital wireframe sort of things to illustrate the animal powers. And Danger Girl, which is essentially, you know, Charlie's Angels on crank.
Uder Frumpenpuff?
What's that?
Is that Uder Frumpenpuff?
Yes. Well, that and the fact that the terrorist organization that they're fighting against in the miniseries is essentially J. Scott Campbell's version of Cobra.
Ooh.
And again, these are two, like, again, really fun comic concept. I mean, Danger Girl's run for the better part of the last 20 years. Nothing's really come out from that IP in a while. And like I said, Wildsiders is sadly never going to see the light of day unless two or three minor miracles happen. But either of those I would like to see. I mean, Danger Girl, if you could get some of the artists that have done some of the Cutie Honey anime that's come out over the years, because, you know, Danger Girl really leans into that cheesecake, campy sort of action-adventure spy aesthetic that J. Scott Campbell is a huge fan of, and I think that's something that could be handled very well by the animators that have worked on the Cutie Honey franchise over the years.
I don't. Their animation is way too fluid and way too cartoony. I would hire somebody who could probably mimic Sunbow.
Ah.
Somebody who could do G.I. Joe.
Interesting. Good idea.
That'd be too bad. Now, not too bad, I should say.
I have one suggestion that just popped in my head. This is my last suggestion tonight. There was a collection of trade books that were put together that I really enjoyed, of two characters teaming up in a very unforeseen team-up at the time. Really loved it because it showed the differences and similarities between the two. It was Superman Majestic.
Yeah, and you don't, and because Mr. Majestic is a character that's, you know, tied into the history of the Wildstorm universe, specifically Wildcats, but not so much that you couldn't just say he's a superhero from an alternate dimension. You don't even have to bring up the Wildcats at all.
What I like about it is Majestros is this character that really harkens back to a lot of the Golden Age ideas of what Superman's like, where, as Red pointed out, the Superman we have today is a Superman that catches us when we fall. He doesn't get, you know, he doesn't go super deep. He doesn't dig into the root of the problem and crush heads and crush hands. Majestros is like the Superman that we saw in Action Number One, the one that would jump all the way to Berlin and in Moscow, grab Stalin and Hitler and drop them off at the UN. Um, So that's what I'm saying is it's a great way to see the differences between the two characters when they both come from the same well. One of the most telling moments and one of my favorite moments in this in that series is where you have Majestros go into a diner for breakfast, and he crushes a pencil, turns the graphite into diamonds, and uses that to pay for his breakfast. The diner's completely evacuated except for the short order cook and the waitress and Majestros, and then in strolls in Superman Kal-El. And he sits down, and they're both having a cup of coffee, and Superman says, "Thanks for watching over Lois, watching over Metropolis, I appreciate it, but look, you got a lot of people nervous," and Majestros is like, "Well, I'm what's it, the Cremian warlord or whatever, it would be an insult,
Cherubim.
It would be an insult if people weren't nervous around me," and what's really telling about this is there's a lot of subtlety in the art where Superman drinks his coffee. He has his full hand around the mug, you know, and Majestros has like his pinky up while he sips his coffee. It's like, you know, it's really like Superman's the working man. Majestros is this refined warrior from a warrior race, and it's really interesting stuff.
Superman's son of a farmer.
I know. Like I said, it's great stuff, just the subtlety in that scene. And to see that put in the animation would be fantastic. It's just such a really weird, oddball, out-of-left-field choice that I don't think it'll ever happen.
Yeah. I guess it's a topic like this, it's really... I don't think we should ever, a topic like this, we shouldn't approach it as if this will happen or this could, it could happen. Like, you know, just like I said with Red and the voice actors, like Land of the Hypothetical, we got Disney Marvel levels of money in the bank to hire whoever we want. It's just, like I said, like the He-Man Thundercats, and I don't care what you say, Red, I am not wrong in that decision.
It's something don't like this do is, it.
You don't do it. I do. You can have everything like, in its own box. I like to mix my
mixing voice. Peanut butter and fish. You just don't do it.
I think well, no one in their right mind would do that, but
I think you never had Thai food then.
I've never had Thai food, and thank God if they do that, I'd never want to.
Peanut butter fish, it's a recipe.
Are you sure it's an actual thing, Ben? You're not just thinking of that one scene from, was that Food Wars or whatever?
I am pretty sure that that's a thing.
Okay.
Because peanut butter sauces is a big Thai thing, and catfish is another big Thai thing.
Well, nuts and gum, all right? It's fucking nuts and gum. You don't mix them.
Well, no, but there's nothing wrong with mixing He-Man and Thundercats.
It's nuts and gum.
To you.
To everyone.
You can't say that.
I can say that.
It doesn't make it right.
It makes it right.
All right, anyways, I think we sort of hit everything we could talk about on this subject, at least today. The things we think would work great, the things that we have seen work or not work, final thoughts, guys.
Okay. You could definitely do something like this in the future. There's so many other miniseries that, you know, we could have picked that, you know, and that's the beauty of miniseries. It's just these one stories that, you know, in a perfect world, you know, we can have a Danger Girl animated series. Hell, I'd love that. I'd just take a direct-to-DVD animated film.
All right, Red?
No suggestions, no.
All right, well, this is your host, Ben.
JT from Saskatoon.
Writing.
We're saying goodnight.
So long.
Peace out.